Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're live in Pittsburgh, the Andy Russell Celebrity Golf Tournament on location, and we saved the best for last, in my opinion. When you talk about the Steelers, you have to interview the president of the Steelers. So, Art Rooney II, thanks for stopping by.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
It's an absolute honor and a privilege, and I learned so much from the Steelers I've talked to today and yesterday, how much the Rooneys believe about giving back to the community, and that's what, I guess, the cornerstone of the Steelers and makes the Steelers such a great organization.
Well, hey, I think the great part about it is that down through the years, we've had so many great players who also believed in giving back to the community and really understood that, you know, it's a blessing to have the opportunity to be involved in the NFL, and it's a great way to share the blessings that you have. And so, you know, we've had very fortunate to have so many players like Andy who take so much of their time out to be part of our community.
And how did your grandfather start that process where he believed in the giving back? Because how old were you when you were observing what he was doing and how he tried to let his players know how important that was?
Well, you know, my grandfather was an unusual character in a lot of ways, and certainly his generosity was unique. I mean, to this day, I still run into people who tell me stories about how he helped their son when he was in the hospital, or, you know, all kinds of stories. It's amazing. And so I think he just led by example. You know, the players could see, you know, what he was like and how he tried to help people. And, you know, in those days, it was on a more informal basis, let's say. And a lot of times it was just cash he had coming out of his pocket. You know, the players, you know, saw the kind of person he was, and I think the rest of our family saw the kind of person he was, and you know, he set an example that I think we're all still trying to live up to, and you know, it was just great to be around him.
Did he always want the Steelers to be a family in a lot of ways, like the team, and compared to other owners in ways, and I think that makes him so special?
Yeah, I mean, he number one, he loved the game of football, and he was an athlete himself, and so I think he understood athletes, and he loved the players, and you know, like you say, he made the players feel like part of his family, I think.
And were you growing up a lot of times around the team when you were young?
I did. I was fortunate to be around the team a lot growing up, and you know, started out as a ball boy, and you know, went on from there, and so a lot of different kinds of memories. Of course, in the early days, it wasn't always a great experience since we didn't have too many good teams. I used to hate Sundays because it usually meant we would lose and I had school the next day. And but things got better, and so we're happy that things have been a little better the last few decades.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess once the team started winning, how old were you? Were you in college at that point?
I was, yeah. When you know, when the 70s rolled around, I was in starting college, and so it was a great time to be part of all those, you know, great moments and times to celebrate.
So were you back and forth with where you're studying for school and had the opportunity to be with the team in certain ways?
I was back and forth. You know, I worked in the summers and worked different jobs over time and part-time jobs, and then I wound up going to law school and becoming a lawyer for a while, and then, you know, back in the late 90s started to kind of transition back into the team.
But all the time, always there Sunday in Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah. I haven't missed very many games over the years, that's for sure.
So what else did you learn from your father in a way about the game of football and understanding things to take on this president's role, and especially in the time you've been president?
Well, you know, my father really came into becoming very involved with the team at a time when Pete Rozelle took over as commissioner of the league around 1960. And that's when I think you could say the business of the NFL started to really grow. I mean, prior to that, it frankly was, you know, was not much of a business. And my grandfather really in his lifetime never made that much money business. It was more of a hobby for him. And so, you know, when my dad became involved, the league started to grow and become more of a business. And And so I got to observe, you know, my father and how he handled contracts and how he handled, you know, the stadium relationship. The lease at the stadium was always an issue that he had to deal with. So a lot of different pieces of the puzzle that that was, you know, was good for me to be able to observe what he was doing.
And it helps being a lawyer, right, in all the contract
sure,
situations
sure.
and all these things. All the presidents in the NFL, I don't all are lawyers, are they? No, not
no, a, no, not probably not that many. But my father, again, back in the earlier days, he said he was spending too much time with lawyers and figured if he had one in the family, it might be better off. So that's why I went to law school.
What do you think is your greatest memory since you've been the president of the Steelers?
Well, you know, I became president in 2003, and at that point it had been a number of years since we had won a championship. And so no doubt the winning two other Super Bowls since I've been president were great moments. And the first time we won an AFC championship game at home at Heinz Field is a great memory. So, a lot of good memories and fun to be around some great players the last decade or so.
What I think what makes the Steelers so special is I can go to the beach, Hilton Head, South Carolina, and I'll have my Steeler T-shirt on, and everyone will say, "Go Steelers." I think it's so great to see every stadium in the country, anywhere, anytime you wear Steeler paraphernalia, they're all Pittsburgh fans.
It's amazing. They're everywhere, and in particular, when we play on the road, I always say it's almost like we never have an away game. There are so many of our fans in the away stadiums, and I think that sends a message to our players really about how important Steelers football is to our fans, and I think it's an advantage for us, that's for sure.
When we're talking about charitable works and how you're trying to take after your grandfather's legacy in so many ways, what other charitable organizations are you guys, fundraisers are you doing during the year?
Well, I mean, the one organization that that we've been involved with for a long time and I've been very active with recently is the United Way. You know, I've served as chairman of the board of the United Way for the last 5 years, and again, it's an organization that we have a long history with, and so it was a pleasure for me to be chairman of the board for a while and really try to help that organization continue to grow, and so it's been great to be part of that. Obviously, there down through the years there are any a number of events every year that we get involved with, so it's a busy schedule, that's for sure.
Well, if you check all the Steelers events of all the players that are involved in the community, it's amazing. I mean, you
there's
go to
a
the
lot.
Website,
yep. There's a lot going on, and again, it's great that our players and our fans, I mean, our fans support all these events, and so that's what makes it very successful.
What is your ultimate goal with the Steelers? What do you want to do? Win another Super Bowl, I'm sure. But what else? What do you say another goal?
Well, obviously winning Super Bowls is great. Our quarterback right now, Ben Roethlisberger, kind of set a goal for himself to try and outdo Terry Bradshaw. Terry won 4 rings, and Ben kind of has his personal goal to win 5. So certainly love to see that happen over the next few years. It's
yeah.
a tall order, but it would be fun to see it happen.
So that's your ultimate goal, and charitably, just to continue to teach the players about the importance of the community and to give back. I think.
I think that our players, again, we have so many great examples in town of retired players that our current players can see. Andy and the whole crew that's here today for the golf outing. So. It's great to see so many activities that our players, whether it's current players or retired players, that are involved with and making a real difference.
Okay, Art, is there a website you can find information on you, or do you do any of the social media or any of that?
No,
stuff?
You know what, I have enough trouble keeping up with my emails, so I don't do Twitter and Facebook and all that kind of stuff. But our organization has a Facebook site and a Twitter account, so there's a lot of information out there on the social media world. It's just not me personally doing it.
So you have to Google you to find out more information on you then?
I guess so. I mean,
yeah,
we spend a lot of time on our website, the team website, Steelers.com, and there's a lot of great information on there, and we try and keep current so our fans have the up-to-date information at all times there.
So I hope when I get to interview you next year, we'll say they're Super Bowl champs. You never know. We've had these years where it's a semi-year, and then we come back ready to go.
Well, you know what? It seems like a lot of times when people don't expect much out of us, that's when we do great. So hopefully we'll have that kind of a year.
Well, thanks for stopping by. It was an honor meeting you.
Good to be with you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. You're listening to Total Education with Neil and the Total Education Network, powered by Beach Lifestyle Media. And we'll be back in just a moment. All right. We're live in Pittsburgh at the Andy Russell Celebrity Golf Classic. And I'm a Beach Lifestyle Celebrity segment, and I'm just blown away that my childhood hero I'm getting to interview, Rocky Blyer. Thanks for stopping by.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
I'm just enthused.
You know, I have to take exception, you know, which is childhood hero, which makes me old. But that's all right. At least you remember. No, at least I'm on your show. That's good.
Exactly. No, but I mean, just your story is just unbelievable for people that have forgotten the story. I mean,
that's usually what happens.
I tried talking to young people about this, and they tell me, well, you know, they know of you as a super stealer, but not how resilient you were. I mean, the story, I mean, being wounded, Purple Heart, I mean, all these things. I mean, it's something that you should be considered the greatest comeback person.
Well, I don't know. No, that's not the case. That's not the case. Yeah. But I think, if it's a story, I think it's a story. It's an American story. I think that's what this country's been built on, people with resilience, people with an idea in their mind and in the persistence not to give up that dream of achievement. Part of my story is that I grew up in the Midwest, and I grew up in Appleton, Wisconsin, and I got a chance to go to Notre Dame and play. But in each one of those segments, and I say this, you know, it was an organization that, from the success of the organization, and you're a part of it, kind of propels you into a different sphere. So in high school, and not to brag, but in high school, we had never lost a football game. And the number one ranked team in the state of Wisconsin all the way back in 1962. But I say that, why? Because all of a sudden you get recognized, or the team does, and so all of a sudden people who play on the team get recognized, and I get to go to Notre Dame. In 64, Ara Parseghian comes in. Things change, rules change. But in 3 years, my junior year, we win a national championship. And because of that group, you get recognized, you know, and I get drafted in the NFL by the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, maybe I wasn't their first choice. And or their top 10 list. I was the 417th person picked in the draft that year. So I was a 16th round draft choice. But when you're out of the Midwest, you go, hey, at least I'm not the last guy picked, because there were 17 rounds. Exactly. You know, I might be able to make this team. So I made the team, special teams, never, you know, played that year. And then it was a 14-game season, and after the 11th game, I got drafted by Uncle Sam, and my draft notification came through, and so I couldn't finish the season. Went to basic training, and then went to Vietnam, and ultimately, as the story goes, I got wounded twice in an action in Vietnam, in both my legs, and the prognosis was that I would not be able to come back and play. And so it was a long time of rehab, not only to get to during the period of time when I was still in the service, but then thereafter. And there's always, you know, part of the life is that opportunities that present themselves, but also turning points. You know, people that have a belief in you and or give you that opportunity. In this case, specifically, and part of the story is that I had asked my doctor when I was in Tokyo that underlying question that we have, or especially a young athlete has, well, what do you think, Doc? Do you think I can go back and play this game?
Right.
And his response was, don't worry about it. You know, you're going to have a normal life. Don't expect to. You just won't have the strength, maybe, or the flexibility to be a running back. And so he just kind of sucked that hope out. You know, I mean, he's as an authority figure, your doctor, and you kind of go, Oh, okay, I guess. Shortly thereafter, and I say shortly, a day or 2 days, unbeknownst to me, I get a postcard in the mail, simple postcard, and it says this: Rock, team's not doing well. We need you.
Oh, my.
Art Rooney.
Yes.
Well, they didn't need me, but the idea
that was just a great.
It was like somebody cared.
Yes,
somebody
cared.
Had an interest.
That's
you know,
Rooney's
and,
for you.
And
yes.
That was the Rooneys, and that's the way they've always been. And they came back. And again, for whatever reason, they bought me a year. They put me on injured reserve that year, and I had another operation. And I came back the following year, and I made the taxi squad
right. Again.
So what they did was they bought me 2 years. 2 years to heal, 2 years to get
right.
bigger, stronger,
right, exactly,
do all
yes.
those things necessary. And then you were kind of on your own in 1972. I make the team again. In 72, but it's special teams. I'm back playing
right,
special
exactly,
teams
yes.
as I was as a rookie. But magical things happen in 72. First time the team kind of coalesces. We win the division, and we have the immaculate reception and turns the tide, and there's kind of hope in the air.
Right.
And you come back, and you work, and then all of a sudden there's a break here and an injury there, and you get a chance to play, and the rest becomes history then thereafter, after 12 years and 4 Super Bowls.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so, you know, so it's a matter of having opportunities that present themselves, but also the desire and the dream
the
of wanting
work.
And the hard work to go through. You know, so when I came back from Vietnam as a lot of soldiers, but, you know, I weighed 165 pounds.
Yeah, that's not for the NFL.
So I can't play in the NFL.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So you got to get your body weight, you got to get your strength. That takes time. And then you got to prove yourself, you know, but you have to have the opportunity to be able to prove yourself. So that's what the Rooney family gave me. And, you know, ultimately you have to take advantage of those things.
Those opportunities.
Yeah,
and you're very humble because, I mean, to be able to be wounded and then come back and play in the NFL, I wonder if anyone's ever done that before after you.
I don't think so.
So that puts you, and I'm not saying on a pedestal,
right,
you're being
right.
very humble.
Right.
But the story of you had a lot of adversity just to even make the team. I remember I saw the movie and read the books.
So because the book is true. I didn't exaggerate at all within the book. The movie is true. Robert Urich played the movie. Now, for people who go, "Oh, the movie." Oh, yeah. Well, it was a made for television movie. So don't go because you can't find it on Netflix or anything because it's not out there on DVD.
Right.
At
I remember
all.
Watching it on television.
It was
so,
on television every now and then, especially during the playoffs. Will some network start running football movies, and it may pop up during that period of time. But Robert Urich, who played the role, it was a 70s movie because it was shot in 79, but it was a 70s movie. I look back at it in time, I'm going, oh, my God, I lived during that period. I'm embarrassed because of how, you know, her hair
right,
was
exactly,
long,
exactly.
We wore plaids, and,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I'm glad Robert Urich, because as people may remember me then, because that's how I see myself.
Right, okay.
Tall, good-looking, lot of hair. And so yeah. He played the role, and it was fine. People say, "Well, what do you think
right,
about the
exactly,
movie?
Exactly,
what do you think
yeah.
about the movie?" I'm going, "Hey, they made a movie about me. It could be bad. They still made a movie about me." And so it's kind of nice to have that happen.
It was an impression on me because
yeah.
I saw the hard work, and I saw somebody that you were the story of Rocky before the story of Rocky.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, they talked about how Rocky stole the story from a boxer, but we have to think about Rocky Dwyer as well. Because, I mean, the way you came back,
right,
the way everyone said, there's no chance. You have no chance in the world. And
right.
you were able to do it. And that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where you see these events raising money for charities, saying people that truly need the help in certain ways and helping out causes that keeps you going because you want to definitely give back.
Well, I think also one of the things that has taken place, and especially with the team, and especially with the Roonies, especially with the guys that I played with, and the guys that are showing up here, and maybe it was an era of giving back. You know, it was part of the expectation. You have an opportunity to play a sport. That's a kid's sport, but you get to play it into young adulthood and a continuation of it. And you come into a community like Pittsburgh, and they pay good money to have a performance on the field, and so you have an obligation. I really feel you have an obligation to give back to that community and to those fans for all those years of support. And Andy has done it as well as other players. LC's got a golf tournament, and there's numerous others as they show up to support, you know, these local events. And that becomes very important.
And the Roonies just, again, they took a chance on you. Then you also saw how Art, how just absolutely the chief, and that to know the chief.
Yeah,
I mean, amazing, and I'll be getting to talk to his grandson today, and I mean that's unbelievable as well because to know the chief and to understand specifically about the giving back, and that's what makes the Steelers so special.
Yeah, you know, and you're right, and in part, you know, and part of that is instilled by that organization and by the chief, you know, in all the great stories about him and what he had done for not only this community but for people. Unknown to the masses or to the general public, and the organization still does that, takes care of people without fanfare and or players without fanfare,
exactly.
And I think that's something that rubs off, and that's something that you learn, and something that you're appreciative, and something that you, as a player, and then ultimately now as a fan and a former player, want to support.
Exactly. Well, Rocky, I wish I'd have more time. I'm definitely going to get you in contact to have you a phone interview to do two segments to talk about all the stories. We could talk for hours. But where can we find more information on you, Rocky? Your website?
Oh, yeah, I got a website. Yeah, I got a website. don't we all today? No, I have one. It's Rocky Blair. .com.
Okay.
Oh, very easy. Yeah, so that's
and also
it.
The Rock on Retirement Show. What time is
it? The Rock on Retirement Show. I'm also in the financial service business. We do the Rock on Retirement Show Sundays on 104.
That was a great radio voice.
It's Sunday, 12:30 to 1:30.
Well, thanks for stopping by.
You're welcome.
Have a great golfing outing, and I
thanks.
Look forward to talking to you again. All right, you're listening to the Total Education Network Beach Lifestyle Celebrity Segment, and also Total Education with Neil. We'll be back in just... We're live in Pittsburgh at the Andy Russell Celebrity Golf Tournament, and the marathon of interviews is not too long this time, but I'm just absolutely amazed to have the opportunity to interview childhood heroes from the Steelers, Rocky Blair, and now Judge Dwayne Woodruff. Judge, thanks for coming by.
Neil, well, thank you very much. But before we start, you know, I know Rocky and I played together, but Rocky's much older than me. So,
okay,
you know,
okay,
just so we're,
okay.
He's in another generation.
Well, okay. Yeah, absolutely. But he played on, because of the time he played for so many years, right?
Yeah, he played for a long time years. He was born much earlier than me, too.
Yeah.
I mean, couldn't you tell? I mean, didn't he was
Yeah,
just
I can tell you. I can tell you. You're ready to go on the football field right now, Dwayne.
Yeah, right.
And then everyone could get a shot of a Super Bowl ring. It's right there. There you go. Oh, wow, that's amazing. So I know that at life after football, you definitely have done some interesting things. So tell our audience, first of all, about after you finished football, how you became a judge. Tell a little bit about that.
Well, I actually thought about becoming a lawyer. And I did that while I was playing. And in fact, I went to law school at Duquesne University School of Law while I was playing and finished, fine university. Finished my law degree in 1988. And I began practicing law for 3 years while I was still playing until I retired at the end of the 90s season. And as Fine University, both my youngest daughter and youngest son just finished Tuesday from law school there.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you very much. And then I practiced law for a while and I've been asked to run for judge several different times. I had some other things on my plate, and my father was living with us. He was a quadriplegic. I was caring for him. Just didn't have the time I felt necessary. But then later on, after my father passed and kids grow up and move away, I said, well, okay, maybe this is a good time. And I ran for judge and was elected. And this is my eighth year now. It's going very well.
Well, that's fantastic, and you're finding another career. And it's very interesting to look at the Super Steelers and all of them, how they had another job while playing football. I've interviewed a lot in the 70s and early 80s that wasn't it. They weren't making tons of money at that time, had to have other
things. The pay scale was vastly different than it is here today. So, my first year with the Steelers, I made $30,000. So I made more money in 3 weeks when we won the Super Bowl than I had all year long. I think we grossed $32,000 from all the playoff games in the Super Bowl. But today it's a different game, it's a different pay structure, and we had a great time during the years that I played as well, and hopefully the guys who are playing now are having the same kind of experience.
So tell me a little bit about the Do the Right Thing Challenge. How long you've been involved in that?
We've been involved here in Pittsburgh for past 6 or 7 years with Do the Right Thing. It is a national program that began about a little more than 15 years ago. Dan McAllister is the executive director over the whole program, coast to coast. It began the Quake Foundation is a big supporter. After Desert Storm, this is their way to say thank you. When you look at Do the Right Thing, it's basically for 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. We do 7th and 8th graders here in Pittsburgh. And it's one of the things we always look at in regard to violence. What are the causes of violence?
Exactly.
How has it impacted your life and your community? And what do you think can be done to eliminate it? Those are the three questions that the kids answer. And we receive some phenomenal, outstanding answers to them. And it goes into a database. And so now, in regard to you having issues in your city, in your community, there's a place for you to go to look to find some answers.
Wow.
What is it that you can do? Kids are in the front lines of this. And so they know the causes. And they also know what can be done to eliminate it as well. So we take that information and try to incorporate it in regard to our policies, procedures in each city as well, and provide that to our leaders. And hopefully they can use that information to provide some specific programs for kids. Next Thursday, the 23rd, we will have our Pittsburgh Do the Right Thing Awards Banquet right here in Pittsburgh at the Convention Center. We had over 1,000 essays this year. We'll be representing about 130 kids at the Convention Center, them, their parents, their grandparents, their teachers, the superintendent, whoever is available to come. And it's a totally free banquet for them. We do all the fundraising. My wife, Joy, and I are co-chairs because I can't do the fundraising. So she does all the fundraising and comes up with all the money. And so we just want them to come, and so we provide a free dinner.
That's right.
We have prizes and awards. The Pirates, as well as the Steelers, are on board. They provide tickets first top three awardees there. And then also we will select our national ambassadors that night, one boy and one girl. And they will be sent to Washington, D.C., to meet all the other national ambassadors throughout the country. And they will have the opportunity to meet their congressmen and senators and talk to them about violence and the causes of it as well. So it's a great program, great experience. A lot of these kids, we've only had, over the last 7 years, only two kids that have ever been on a plane before. So it's a great experience for them to meet not only their leaders, but other kids, their peers as well. And they have some fun times there, too. So we take care of them. But they're there for about a week having a great time and enjoying. And it's just our way of thanking them and hopefully keeping them on the right track.
So, Judge, being a judge, do you think that this is one reason why you're taking on this cause in so many ways? Because you see what happens with violence and all the different things with with teenagers and middle school and trying to help them in a certain way before they turn in the wrong direction.
Right. Well, my wife and I, we've been involved with kids, you know, our whole lives. We've been very blessed with our three children, and you know, we just feel that, you know, everybody should give back, and this is our way of trying to give back. But being a judge sort of just it brings it home.
Yes.
You know, some of the stories and different things, and some of the things that I hear and listen to, I mean, it's appalling. It's unbelievable. You know, I used to watch certain shows and different things on television, you know, about some of the things that are going on in this world. And you know, it doesn't even come close to some of the real things that are happening to our kids here in this country and across the world. So this is our small way that hopefully we can encourage kids and get them to react and continue in the right direction.
Well, fantastic, Dwayne. Let me stop this for 1 second. Well, absolutely, Dwayne. I see how busy you are as a judge. The phone just keeps ringing.
Yeah, it does. In fact, that was my office. So, you know, even when I get away from the office, there's always things to do, motions and different things come in. Do the Right Thing. It's coming up next week. So it's always,
oh my gosh, so
always
yeah,
something. So I do apologize to my group before I go out that, hey, my phone may ring, you know. So, but, you know, they sort of give me a pass because I can call the sheriffs, too, if I need to.
So, Dwayne, where can we find more information on you? Our listeners and our viewers can help out, Do the Right Thing, and also learn more about you.
Well, in regard to Do the Right Thing, it's Do the Right Thing, DTWT. Right with a WT.org, and you can find some things in regard to Do the Right Thing, and I also have my daughter handles my Facebook as well as Twitter. Any information you want, you can do that, and we'll get that to you as well through the social media. I do have a phone. I handle that, answering phones, but I'm not very good in regard to other social media. So my daughter takes care of all those things,
okay.
And she's also one of the coordinators with my tip staff, Lou Ransom.
Well, fantastic, Dwayne. We need to sit down sometime and see how we can help each other out promoting some of your events as well.
That'd be great. I love it.
All right. Thanks again.
Okay. Neil, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
All right. You're listening to Total Education, powered by the Beach Lifestyle Celebrity Segment and Total Education with Neil. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, we're live in Pittsburgh at the Andy Russell Celebrity Golf Tournament Classic, and I'm so excited. My first guest, and I'm finally going to get to meet him in person. Andy Russell, thanks for stopping by.
Hey, great to see you.
It's fantastic that you're here, and I'm really excited to talk to you about specifically last night's gala. Last night's gala was just fantastic. We just had an unbelievable time meeting all the great athletes that were there, but also we did definitely raise a lot of money.
Yes, yeah, so, you know, that's bottom line. That's what it's all about. And, we did very well on the live auctions and the silent auction items. So, you know, it was a terrific event.
It definitely was terrific. And I a lot of favorites I met. And I was really surprised to meet LC Greenwood. That was really cool.
Yeah, you know, LC comes to virtually everything we put together, and he's a terrific guy. He supports us very much, and all the former Steelers are like that. They, you know, the Rooneys taught us to give back to the community. The chief, you know, would
right,
say that
exactly.
You got to give back to the community, and we all of us we appreciate that. So we all have different charitable efforts we're working on. That's how we see each other most of the time.
And so you're excited to see guys you've not seen in a while, right? Every year you probably see them once a year or twice.
Yeah, I mean, there's some of the fellows I see at the Super Bowl because I represent the Steelers at the Taste of the NFL in every Super Bowl. I see some of those guys, but not all of the guys. You know, like Tom Mack, I haven't seen for quite a while.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
huh?
And you know, he's an 11-time Pro Bowler. Hall of Famer. You know, people don't know his name, but he was an outstanding player. And you know, there's a lot of guys like that here that are also pretty good golfers, and they're nice people. So that the foursomes enjoy, you know, playing with them.
They're very personable. You could just go up and talk to them, and I think that's very important to do an event like this so that the people that are donating their time and also money get the opportunity to really talk to them and have a on the golf course and learn more about what they're doing now and stuff.
Oh, absolutely. They're not arrogant guys. They're very, you know, outward going and like to meet people and make friends, and so they're terrific guys.
Well, definitely terrific, and I'm enjoying it because I was really shocked to see Floyd Little, because I used to live in Denver, and when they were in the Super Bowl, and then he had to kind of tell me, and I don't know if I'll say this, he kind of told us why the Broncos lost. So I got the inside track. So he was, and I'm sure he's told you that story before, right? You know why he thinks
He has a lot of opinions about what happened and what should have happened and that didn't happen, but, you know, he's a great guy, and he's come to this tournament, you know, many, many years. He's been a terrific supporter.
And ultimately, what is happening every year, you raise money for different UPMC causes. So tell us who we're raising money for this year.
Well, this year the big one is the Concussion Center at UPMC Sports Medicine, and it is the largest concussion center in the country. Last year they took care of 18,000 people. They expect to do more this year. So it's an incredible, and it's a new science, because they're learning as they go. I mean, it's not something that everybody has figured out. I just because we're giving all money to that cause, I want to go in and understand better what they're doing. And I took tests from 8:30 in the morning till 2:30 in the afternoon,
right,
where they'd give you 14 words, they just read it off real fast and give it back, you know. And I'm like, what? I can't give you back those words you just said. So it's kind of interesting. So they test you to see how your brain works on long-term memory, short-term memory. And then they don't, at the end of the day, they said, well, we can't really say if whether, I had 10 concussions I can remember, probably another 10 I can't. But they said, we can't really, you know, blame the football on what's going on in your brain, because I did well on certain things and badly on other things, and, you know, it was interesting.
Well, I think it's interesting because people get concussions, are out for 3 or 4 weeks, and when I was a professional wrestler, I know I've had a lot of concussions. So we'll see different things with chairs hitting me on the head and trash cans and everything in between. Now we know a lot more. I don't know if I would have done that, especially with the research. You heard some of the stories, these pro wrestlers that have died, and the Chris Benoit, certain people like this. So I think this is very good that we're getting to, and also what happened with Mike Webster. So I think all those.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of NFL players have passed away, and they're extraordinarily concerned about it. You know, it's a violent game, and I don't believe in cheap shots. I don't think if you come free on a blitz, you shouldn't hit the quarterback in the back of the head. That's a cheap shot. But I do believe there's lots of times where you have to hit a guy in the head, because you try to step away from him and tackle him around the ankles, he's going to make you miss, and he's going to go for a touchdown. So the scores are going to be 58-50. Like the Pro Bowl today is a joke because they don't play defense.
Right. And just think about with your knee, the defensive players are going to get injured now because the offensive players are so fast and quick. You make the wrong cut on the field, you're going to get a knee injury, you're going to get an ankle injury. So they're not protecting you for your career of making money in this sport, saying, oh, by the way, you know, we're going to protect your head and concussions. So I think it's good that they're doing the research, because I think some people are jumping too much to conclusions. And the talk last night talked about that as well, right, about the whole situation that we don't know, and that's why we continue to do the research.
Yeah, I mean, back when I played, the concussions were considered a joke. I mean, if the mantra was always never show your opponent you're hurt. Get your butt up, get off the ground, get into that, back to the huddle no matter what. And I can remember, you know, having a bad concussion one time, when I ran back to the huddle, I got up, even though there was a bright flash of light, I knew I had the concussion. And the strangest thing happened, as I ran back to the huddle, the ground jumped up and hit me in the face 3 times. Obviously, I was falling down, but I thought it was jumping up and hitting me. And so, you know, and then you'd come out of the game and they'd say, are you a boy or girl? Or how many fingers do I have up?
Yeah.
And you'd say, what? And they'd send you right back in. So I'm glad I played when I did, because I wouldn't have had a career if I had to, you know, have this baseline test done all the time before I can go back in the game. So these guys are out 2 or 3 weeks.
Right.
I mean, I never missed a game in high school, college, Army, or pro.
Mm-hmm.
Played every single game. And the mantra is, you got to play hurt.
You got to play hurt.
And I believed in that. And now they're changing everything. And I'm worried they might sissify the game, which would be bad.
So you're hoping through this research we're going to find out that some concussions we really have to look out for. If you're having multiple concussions, But if it's just one or two, why are we jumping so to conclusions? Because there's so many things that can come back to this in the research. So I'm so glad that they're raising money for that. And also, what other things are we raising money for this?
Well, the UPMC also gives to the urology department, which is studying prostate cancer. And Walter Bent, who's the guy who convinced me, he was the head of Xerox here in Pittsburgh, and he convinced me to start this tournament 37 years ago. And he passed away from prostate cancer. And so we decided to give money to UPMC's cancer research in that area. So we have different things we're, you know, trying to support. And then about 30% of the money comes to the Russell Charitable Foundation. And my wife, Cindy, who's on the board of Animal Friends, the zoo, and we have money going out to all that, those kinds of things. So we love animals. And we all kinds of other, you know, giving money to wounded veterans and things of that nature.
Well, I recommend everyone listening to this show next year, if they're from Pittsburgh, to go to the gala. We were taken care of. Thank you again. It was unbelievable. So where can our listeners and viewers find out more information on you, Andy, and also the other charitable works that you do?
Well, we have a charitable foundation webpage, which is andyrussell.org. So they could, you know, Google me on andyrussell.org, and they'd see all the information about the various charities and so forth.
Fantastic. And also, you can purchase your book on the website as well.
Absolutely. Well, all the money goes to the charitable effort. We sell that book.
Well, I have to interview you on your book, that's for sure. And I know that you got my business partner's book today, G.J. Reynolds, as he's here, and he's in the background saying, "Hello, G, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here right now." And that's a shout-out to him and all the people that help coordinate the event from Beach Lifestyle as well. So, Andy, thanks again for coming by, and looking forward to hearing how the golf tournament goes and my team that I put together will win it, hopefully. I'm going to put that out there.
Good luck.
Especially, I recruited an NFL player at the end. At last minute, got somebody. So we'll see what happens.
Terrific. Okay,
right,
good luck.
All right, thanks, Andy, for coming by.
Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to the Beach Lifestyle Celebrity Segment, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're live in Pittsburgh, and I was about to say L.A., with the Andy Russell Celebrity Golf Tournament, Total Education Network, powered by Beach Lifestyle Media, and also Total Education with Neil. And my first ever Hall of Famer that I've interviewed, and I'm really excited to welcome to Pittsburgh Tom Mack. Tom, how are you?
Well, thank you. I'm fine, and I'm pleased to be in Pittsburgh.
And what's kind of funny is, Tom, I had maybe a few drinks last night and wasn't thinking. I've had Pro Bowlers, but never a Hall of Famer, so it's awesome to have a conversation with you. But let's specifically, for our audience, tell how pretty much your story, how you broke to get into the NFL, and where you came to be 11-time Pro Bowler.
Well, it's a long story, but it's a good story. I was a kid who got to go to the University of Michigan, and I went to Michigan really to put myself through college and get an engineering degree, which I did do. Football was just the vehicle that kind of paid for school. I wasn't particularly a good player my first 2 years. Then they made me a tackle, and everything seemed to change. We won the Big Ten, we won the Rose Bowl, and suddenly people started saying, you know, you're good enough, you could play pro ball. I was not an All-American. This is the last year. This is a long time ago. This 1965, actually, the fall of 1965. The AFL and the NFL were rival leagues at the time.
Okay.
They were still fighting with each other. The draft was actually the weekend of Thanksgiving instead of in April.
Oh, wow.
And they were trying to get, you know, to go to one or the other. What happened, interestingly enough, is the Rams had the second pick in the entire draft, and they picked me as their first draft choice. They picked Mike Garrett, who was the Heisman Trophy winner that year, and from SC, as their second draft choice. I've got a great article at home from the LA Times the next morning. It says, "Rams draft Mike," meaning Garrett,
oh, wow,
comma, guy named Mac. Then it goes, did who? because nobody ever heard of me. And it ended up being a nice story. I had met a girl the year before when I played in the Rose Bowl from Pasadena. So going to the Rams was the perfect story for us. Ann and I have been married 47 years.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
So it worked out pretty well. And I went to the Rams. The Rams actually were the last place team in the league. That's why they'd had the high draft choice. So George Allen came that year and as our new head coach, and we really kind of turned things around so that of the 13 years I played, all but one of them we had a winning season, and every year going into the last game, we still had a chance to win it all.
Oh, wow, okay.
So it was a pretty lucky experience that I went through with really good teams. And as you mentioned, I was lucky enough to get picked to 11 Pro Bowls. Interestingly enough, I missed my first year, and I missed my 11th year.
Oh, wow.
Most people figure that once you get there, you either keep going or you don't.
Right.
And my 11th year was not a sterling year, so I guess I doubled down and got a little bit mad. And got the last two.
So, oh, wow, interesting. And the experience of going to the Pro Bowl must be amazing as well.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of people don't associate the Pro Bowl with a serious game. But back in the day, it was a pretty serious game. And, no, I never went to Hawaii either. They played the Pro Bowl. They played it in Los Angeles a fair amount, but they also moved it around. We were down in San Diego. We played in Kansas City. We played in Dallas, Texas. We played in New Orleans. We played in Miami, Florida. We played in Tampa, Florida. They seemed to rotate it around. So the fans could enjoy the game, and it was a little more serious then than it is now.
So people played really hard. They didn't care about the injuries?
Well, you weren't trying to hurt each other, but maybe that's a sad comment because, honestly, when we played as hard as we played, you weren't really in the business of trying to hurt somebody else.
Right, exactly.
You were just in the business of trying to let them be sure they knew who you were and you know, don't come around here again. but it is – it's really it's softened up to the point where it's not much of a game anymore, I don't think.
So tell me the story of when you knew you were first of all in the whole nomination process, meaning of the situation to being inducted in the Hall of Fame. Did you consider when you retired that you thought you were going to be a Hall of Famer?
I never. And the other interesting part is, interestingly enough, the Steelers, for example, when Terry Bradshaw retired, nobody said he was a Hall of Famer or a sure Hall of Famer. I mean, everybody assumed that they'd had great teams, but the press didn't go about proclaiming guys that have played 2, 3, 4 years as sure Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
You know, is nonsense. Actually, I got nominated for the Hall a total of 13 times in 15 years and didn't get in. So I actually got in the last year that I was eligible as a modern day player. And I kind of cynically didn't figure I'd get in then either. So when I got in, it was really, for all of us, extremely rewarding and satisfying that I actually had played well enough that I was that good.
So tell me the story of when you knew you were going to be a Hall of Famer. What happened?
Well, my wife and I actually were getting ready to go down to the world's largest swap meet in Quartzsite, Arizona. And our son-in-law called us on the phone and said, "Tom, you made it finally." He'd seen the broadcast, and that was about 2 minutes before the Hall of Fame actually called me and said, "Congratulations, you made it."
Wow.
Now, the interesting part about that story is that week they set you up to go to Hawaii because they want to introduce you at halftime of the game. So they had sent me the plans. Here's the tickets, blah, 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 everything else. So I went to the airport with my wife. We had to go to L.A. and then to Hawaii. And I got to the counter and said the tickets, blah, 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 are in my name. And they said, "Yeah, we got a reservation in your name, but no ticket."
Oh, my.
So I got to pay for my own ticket to go to be introduced to the Hall of Fame. But fortunately, they reimbursed me, so it was a good deal. But obviously, I wasn't going to turn that down.
And do you have in your house pictures of the whole event and all that stuff? What do they give you the hall?
What they give you that I do have in my house is a replica of the bus that they put in Canton.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, and that whole process is fascinating because, one, you really get a real-life sculptor artist who spends a lot of time trying to represent you as not as you are now, but as you played then. And he worked through a variety of different pictures, worked up a model, showed it to us, because my wife basically collaborated completely with
that. Right, exactly.
And what was interesting, most of the time that I played pro ball, I had a mustache. And the first cuts, they were trying to make it look like I looked as a rookie. And we finally convinced them we didn't want that look.
Okay.
We wanted the look of the second half of my career.
Right, right.
So the bust in Canton, yeah, I've got long, shaggy hair and a mustache, and it's how I looked in the 70s when everybody had long hair, not how I looked in the 60s when I kind of had a crew cut.
Gotcha. And so do you have a spotlight on it? I joke with people that, with the Grammy, I have Grammy Award winners on, and I have other people, and I say Emmy Award, and I say, when you walk in, do you have that spotlight? The room saying, here it is. No, you know.
No spotlights.
So where is it at? Where is it in the house?
It's in a study that I use in the house off to the side, and unless you're looking for it, you wouldn't see it. So it's... to me, it's as special it can be. I have pictures, like a lot of people have pictures, but the pictures are me with different teammates and different friends in football, and that's, you know, when it's all said and done, that's kind of what it's about, the friendships and the good times we had together and the fact that we got something accomplished.
Okay, so Tom, do you have a place to find information on you, or do we have to Google you, or do you have a website?
I guess you have to Google me.
You have to Google
yeah,
to find out information and things like that and everything. But I hope you do really well on the golf course tonight and have a great time meeting the guys and also with your alumni. And thanks for coming by.
My pleasure. Thank you.
It was an honor. Thanks. Okay. You're listening to the Total Education Network powered by the Beach Lifestyle Celebrity Segment and Total Education with Neil. We'll be back in just... We're live in Pittsburgh. And it's not a marathon of interviews. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor for the Total Education Network Beach Lifestyle Celebrity Segment and also for our TV Total Education with Neil. And I'm with a Hall of Famer, World Golf Hall of Famer, Carol Semple Thompson. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, Carol, I'm a little confused when I was doing the research about that you're not a professional, you were an amateur. Kind of explain that difference between an amateur and professional in a way.
Well, a quick explanation is that amateurs don't make any money playing golf, either competing or teaching. And when I was young, getting out of college, I decided not to turn professional. I didn't want to be on the LPGA Tour. Just wanted to be a big fish in a little pond, if you will, in the pool of amateurs. So it's sort of a foreign concept to a lot of people today because everybody thinks about money.
Because at that point in time, amateur was considered different than it is today, would you say?
Well, I think it was much more respected. I mean, if you go way back to Bobby Jones, he was an amateur back in the 20s, and he was the best player maybe of all time as an amateur. He won the most USGA championships, national championships of anyone. I mean, Tiger Woods is coming close, but he still hasn't caught Bobby. So it doesn't, to me, it's a badge of honor to be an amateur.
And the honor of being in the Hall of Fame. So tell us the story of that, because I'm interested in that, because that's, I guess, when everyone you meet, that's your, and you seem very modest about having that, being inducted.
Well, I should be modest because I'm not sure I ever really deserved it, but I did have a great amateur career. I won lots of USGA championships, national championships in the women's category. First the women's amateur, which is for all ages, and then for the mid-amateur, which is 25 and older, and then the senior, 50 and older. So I've won a total of 7 national championships.
Okay.
And then I also was in the administrative end of things. I was on the executive committee of the USGA, and I've played on national teams. I've represented the United States on 17 different teams. So I think it was sort of a longevity thing that even though I never turned professional, never won a lot of money, I was a good player. I hope to be still a good player, but and I was also involved in a lot of aspects of the game.
So when you were an amateur, did you have a full-time job during that time?
I did for a while. I was a banker. I sold real estate, and then I was a banker in investment bonds or credit municipal bonds. And then when I married my husband, I worked for a few more years, and then I decided that I would like to play amateur golf, so he allowed me to quit. So he supported me for these many years.
And so you must love the game.
Of course I love the game. I come by it naturally, though. My parents were both very good players, both very good amateur players, both involved with the United States Golf Association in the administrative end of things. So it was sort of a natural for me.
When I think about specifically this tournament in general, getting to meet all these athletes, it must be really cool.
Oh, it's so cool.
The gala yesterday, it was unbelievable meeting my childhood heroes. Floyd Little, Elsie Greenwood. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And today, the people I'm going to get to meet and interview, it's unbelievable. It's really cool event.
Andy Russell is absolutely the best. He gathers people from all over. He's had this tournament for, 37 years, as we know, and has raised an amazing amount of money for charity. He does so much for so many people. He gives back to charities everywhere. So I admire him tremendously, and it is fun to be. I've gotten to know the a lot of the Steelers through Andy, like Mike Wagner, Elsie.
Yeah,
Elsie is a great guy. Had so many physical problems, but those Steelers who have stayed around Pittsburgh and keep giving back to the city,
yes,
it's just great.
What I consider, when you think of Pittsburgh, you think of the Steelers, and to be part of around these guys and to just know. I mean, 4 Super Bowls. I remember all of it because that's in my childhood, so it's just unbelievable. And I think that one other thing that I'm sure you like is you're one of the real golfers in the tournament as a celebrity because you were, again, the amateur and Hall of Famer. So are you going to give pointers to the other golfers at the...
Oh, I hope not.
You hope not? Or no. you hope you have a good team that you can win, right?
Well, I hope we have a compatible team, which I know we will. We'll have a great time. I'm just out there to have fun. I really... they're not looking to me for pointers.
But I'm sure you have some, right?
Well, I could make a few comments, but I think I might refrain.
Well, anytime I have a Hall of Famer, you say, well, what to do here? And I had to scramble because I could have golfed in it, and I'm just not played in 10, 11 years. And Mary Amons, who's part of our beach lifestyle team, said, no, Neil, don't embarrass yourself. So, I mean, I'm a pretty big guy. I can drive the ball far, but if I hit maybe I won't be able to hit it off the tee. So that's a good thing.
Well, I think a lot of the Steelers or a lot of the athletes here are not very good golfers. So they're big guys, and they can hit it a mile, but they never know where it's going, so... You'd fit right in.
Well, maybe next year. Maybe next year. I'll have to start getting some pointers and certain things like that. What would you say was your greatest moment next to being inducted in the Hall of Fame as a golfer? Which event would you say? Winning which one?
Probably my first national championship, which was the U.S. Women's Amateur. My father was vice president of the USGA.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
And he came to the finals. My mother had been really sick, so he made it to the finals. And he was able to present the trophy to me. So it was really very special for our family to have that connection.
So that did definitely help break into the business because of your father, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was just so dedicated to the game. He loved it, and... He would have done anything to. He would have loved to have been a full-time amateur competitor. He did play in national championships, but never won anything. So,
what do you think of the game today? Golf game today. Are you a fan? Are you like going back to certain times, especially watching it? Because I know a lot of people who play it aren't fans per se, but you know the gentleman part of the game's leaving a little bit in ways. What is your take on it?
Well, I'm a fan of the game, for sure. I think it is still a gentleman's game. But it has become big time. And it used to be when you went to a professional event, the galleries were very quiet, very respectful. And that has changed. I mean, there are only a couple of places where I can think of, like the Masters, where people are very respectful and quiet. But other places...
Really? Are you kidding me?
That they are.
They're loud, really.
Not at the Masters. Not at the Masters.
Well,
I mean, those tournaments in Arizona, the crowds are yelling around the par threes, and they're starting to taunt the players, which I think is really sad. There was just last week some people were taunting Sergio, and I don't like that part of the game at all.
No, definitely it's something that this sport is something that, again, it's a competition, but yet also it's something where you some days don't have a good game and it becomes frustrating, especially if you have a bad day.
It can certainly be frustrating. I can tell you that.
I mean, going putt-putt with my daughter, I feel the frustration sometimes saying, can I get this up? You'll be able to get this up. But I think it's also just a great way to connect with people. And I'm sure that the people that your foursome is, you get to meet them, learn more about them, and almost create friendships in certain ways.
Of course. If you're going to spend 4 hours with someone doing anything, especially golf, you're going to get to know them and know their character. And it's just a tremendous way to make contacts. That's why people use it for business all the time. But it's just fun being around good people. The people who play golf are honest people. They're polite for the most part. They're great people.